Despite his important contribution to the late Romantic period in music, and symphonic form in particular, César Franck is not a familiar figure to many concertgoers. There's an irony in the fact that in this country he's more well-known, although perhaps somewhat anonymously, outside the concert hall. His Parnas Angelicus, a short communion motet written for tenor, organ and strings, is sung with alarming frequency at weddings and funerals alike the length and breadth of the country, despite, it must be said, being liturgically suitable for neither. How strange that this little piece, the workaday product of a Parisian church organist, can be lodged in the musical consciousness of the masses, whilst within the concert hall, Franck remains one of the more shadowy figures of the 19th century, and certainly one of the most misunderstood. The Belgian musicologist Michael Stockham observed in 1991, "Franck died 100 years ago, and never has he appeared more mysterious." Many composers over the last century have found his style quite repellent, including Ravel and Vaughan Williams. In 2010, The New Yorker named Franck as the composer whom people love to hate. Despite such bad press, a handful of his works are quite well established in concert programming. The symphony, the violin sonata, the string quartet, the symphonic variations. But the works that lead us most directly to the essence of Franck's musical personality and language, and perhaps to a better understanding, are those he wrote for his own instrument, the organ. As critic and musicologist Andrew Thompson points out, any assessment of Franck's oeuvre which fails to take a proper account of his organ music is doomed to remain partial and incomplete. The first works of any importance Franck wrote for the organ appeared in the early 1860s and were inspired by the new instrument in the Basilica of St. Clotilde, where Franck was organist. It was built by the celebrated Cavalier Coll, whose organs were the catalyst for a whole new way of thinking about the organ and its music, and paved the way for the French symphonic school that really began with Franck and reached its zenith with the organ symphonies of Vidor and Vierne. Through various mechanical and tonal innovations, Cavalier Coll created what we now generally refer to as the symphonic organ, possessed of a huge dynamic range and new methods of controlling that range, and a palette of tone colours that in its richness and variety aimed to emulate the orchestra. Without doubt, the new instrument at St. Clotilde inspired Franck and rekindled his creative impulse. He said of it, "My new organ, it's an orchestra." And his next major creative output can be seen as a direct result of this welcome new stimulus. A collection later published as Six Pieces for Organ represents a quantum leap in the composer's own achievement and arguably contains the first major works for the instrument, apart from Mendelssohn's six sonatas, since the time of J.S. Bach. These pieces also made a startling contrast at the time to the operatic frivolities usually indulged in by the organists of Second Empire Paris. They looked to Meyerbeer and Offenbach for their inspiration. But Franck, he looked back 100 years to J.S. Bach. Finale, the sixth piece of the collection, opens with an extended and virtuosic pedal solo modelled on that at the beginning of Bach's Toccata in C, BWV 564. Nothing like this had been heard or even possible in France before. Hitherto, French organs had pedal boards that in their range and positioning were only suitable for playing slow cantus firmus melodies or sustaining bass notes that didn't move too quickly. No self-respecting Parisian organist did too much damage with his feet. However, with the revival of interest in the music of J.S. Bach that began with Mendelssohn, and the gradual awakening of interest in German organs with their fully developed contrapuntal pedal divisions, Cavalier Coll began to incorporate such features in his own organs. The new St. Clotilde instrument had a fully independent pedal department with German-style long keys and 30-note compass. In order to fully utilise this new feature, Franck had acquired a pedalboard attachment for his piano at home so that he could develop the necessary technique, and the finale is a direct and startling result of these new endeavours. The largest work in the six pieces was what Franck titled Grand Pièce Symphonique, a substantial canvas of almost 30 minutes duration, which in its length and form broke new territory for the organ. It represents an attempt to incorporate the instrument into the German symphonic tradition and demonstrates Franck's admiration of Beethoven in its quasi-philosophical approach to thematic material and development. A three-note question mark motif near the opening suggests Beethoven's last string quartet and its celebrated "must it be" question in the final movement, a suggestion that has an even clearer manifestation at the opening of the Franck Symphony heard in this evening's concert. I hesitate to make too much of the Beethoven connection, however, for fear of emulating Franck's pupil Vincent Dandy, who began his 1906 biography of his mentor with the following infamous passage. At the precise time when the giant of the symphony, Ludwig van Beethoven, had just put the finishing touches to the sublime Missa Solemnis in D major, on that date was born in Liège the one who was destined to become, in religious art, as much as in the symphonic field, the true successor to the master of Bonn. One has to admire the biographer's histrionic sense of fate and unconditional adulation. But, as English musicologist Winton Dean points out, Dandy and his fellow pupils tended to place their teacher on a saintly pedestal. One has to admire the biographer's histrionic sense of fate and unconditional adulation. But, as English musicologist Winton Dean points out, Dandy and his fellow pupils tended to place their teacher on a saintly pedestal, making him out to be such a cloistered namby-pamby that we are surprised to learn that he ever dared commit matrimony. The ensuing churchy pallor that has hung over the composer ever since, the pater seraphicus, lost in reverie in his organ loft, has done him no justice. In fact, it is surely challenged by the ecstasy, bordering on eroticism, that is evident in some of his more highly charged chromatic writing, and in the glorious perorations Franck achieves when combining thematic material. These qualities can be found in the next major set of works Franck wrote for the organ, a collection titled Three Pieces, written in 1878 for the inauguration of the Cavaillé-Coll organ in the new Trocadero. The Fantasy in A, first of the set, presents two principal themes in alteration in a series of restless modulations born out of the inherent chromaticism of each. Here's the first theme. And notice, too, the alternation between the flue stops of the principal keyboard, the grand orgue, with the reed stops of the secondary racy division, equating respectively to the strings and winds of the orchestra. Here is the second theme, heard in an unstable, lopsided syncopation over pianistic arpeggios in the left hand. A third theme is heard distantly and tremulously on the Vox Humana stop. These three ideas undergo various transformations until, after a series of false leads and inconclusive cadences, a thrilling crescendo suddenly takes hold, and the first two themes emerge on the full organ, combined in effortless counterpoint, and at last immutable in tonality and rhythm. However, it's the plaintive third theme that eventually supplants the other two and closes the work in the tonic minor, with a strange sense of longing made all the more bittersweet by the memory of the thrilling climax heard moments earlier. By now, it's possible to see a range of influences at work in Franck's organ music. Not just J.S. Bach and Beethoven, but Liszt and Wagner too, in the use of short, dramatic motifs, underpinned by a restless harmonic agitation, giving a sense of aspirant struggle, and an emerging use of cyclical form to provide large-scale symphonic structure and developmental tension. At this stage, we should note that these influences are a two-way affair, and that Franck's orchestral works, not least the Symphony in D minor, bear the imprint of the organ loft in many ways. Chief amongst these are the harmonic language, its energy derived from a wide-ranging modulation suggestive of Franck the organist and improviser, and the orchestration, with blocks of opposing colour suggesting organ registration, strings and wind mirroring, respectively, the flue and reed choruses of the organ. To conclude, let's turn to the very last thing he wrote for the instrument. The three chorales, completed in 1890, shortly before Franck succumbed to pleurisy. These works are the very best of Franck, almost mini-symphonies that contain the essence of his mature style. They recall the great Baroque forms of Fantasia, Toccata, and Passacaglia. Their legacy stretches from Vierne and Vidor to Debussy and Duparc and through to Messiaen. They stand not just as monuments of the organ literature, but of 19th-century French music generally. The third of the set, the chorale in A minor, is an extended fantasia built around an opening toccata that looks back to Bach and an ensuing chorale with a distinct modal flavour. After these themes appear in various forms, a central adagio supplants them, featuring a yearning melody for solo reed stops that in its delicate chains of suspensions and syncopations over sumptuously chromatic harmonies counts as one of the most expressive things he ever wrote. The conclusion of this work combines the two themes heard at the opening in a blazing peroration for the tutti. We join it at the end of a series of long pedal points on inversions of the dominant, a favourite Franckian harmonic device, building tension that is then released in the assertion of the tonic when the themes re-enter for the final time.